Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Looking for something scary, morbid, frighteningly insane?
Get out!
Every form of horror, from ghosts, cryptids, and curses, to deals with the devil, giant insects, and more. Join us at Haunted Tales, our weekly horror anthology series. And let me tell you a story.
Are you ready to dive into the depths of intrigue and unravel the caffeinated enigmas that surround us?
Look no further than the electrifying world of Caffeinated Conspiracies, the podcast that's about to jolt your curiosity awake.
Join us for a caffeine-fueled adventure where every sip and every secret is a clue waiting to be deciphered.
In each episode, our dynamic hosts delve into the most thought-provoking and jaw-dropping theories that will leave you wide-eyed and pondering. From mysterious artifacts all the way to the depths of the ocean, cover-ups, conspiracies, the unknown, all with a cup of coffee.
Available on all major podcast platforms, subscribe now and stay tuned for mind-blowing episodes that will leave you questioning everything. Remember, truth is stranger than fiction. So let's dive into the mysteries together. Join us on Caffeinated Conspiracies, satisfying your curiosity one cup at a time.
Alrighty, Mom, what are you going to be telling us about today?
Well, I'm going to be talking about a love triangle that was not full of love and bad things happened.
That's not good.
Yes. No. No. What are you going to be talking about?
I'm going to be talking about the time that UFOs were spotted over Washington, D.C.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Hang on. I need to fix my... Okay. And to go with this story, I have the Bourbon Ricky. And I chose this because I looked up the drink of Washington, D.C., and it said it was a Ricky. So instead of a gin Ricky, I chose a Bourbon Ricky.
Nice. I like it. I appreciate that. I think I'll like that more.
Yeah, me too. So this drink consists of 1.5 ounces of bourbon, a half a lime, and top it with sparkling water. Very easy drink.
Yes.
Let's give this a try.
Okay. Did you put your half a lime in your glass?
No. I don't even have ice in my glass.
Oh. It's not sweet enough for me.
I like it because it's not sweet.
I know. I had like really very pathetically small limes. So I did the juice of two or one whole lime instead of just half. And it's very limey.
Oh.
So that might be why. I don't know. My limes were like the size of a marble almost. Yeah, they were really tiny and kind of sad. So I think I do like it better than I would a gin Ricky, though. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know if I've ever had one, but it sounds all right. Lime and sparkling water and liquor is hard to make taste bad.
True, true.
Thank you. Alrighty, let's get into this DC UFO story. It was a warm, humid night on July 19th, 1952, when air traffic controller Edward Nugent noticed something bizarre on his radar. Seven objects appeared about 15 miles south of DC, heading right towards town. However, they were kind of bouncing back and forth and not following a specific flight path. And no aircrafts were like supposed to be in that area. So they weren't flying in a straight line. They were kind of like zigzagging.
Oh.
Like, okay. In a way that planes can't fly.
And he only saw this on radar, not visually. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Ed's boss called over to some technicians to check on his radar when they discovered it was functioning completely fine. Ed called over to another air control who confirmed they also saw blips on the radar. The other controllers actually saw one of the crafts and described it as a super bright light that hovered for a couple seconds and then took off at unexplainable speeds. When Ed got off the phone with the other controllers, he looked down and saw that even more blips appeared on the radar, this time from different directions. Yeah.
Okay, so. Seven was a lot to begin with, mm-hmm. and more than that is really disturbing.
That's scary, yeah.
Yeah.
Pilot S.C. Pierman was waiting on the runway to go ahead and take off when air traffic controllers told him to hold on because of the unidentified objects. Pierman looked out of the cockpit and saw six super bright lights flying over at extreme speeds over the course of 14 minutes.
Wow.
So these things were kind of going for
a while.
A good amount of time, yeah.
Okay.
Once Ed saw the objects heading towards the White House, he called Andrews Air Force Base and let them know about the situation. They reported that they hadn't seen anything on the radar, but right after that, Staff Sergeant Charles Davenport observed an orange-reddish light to the south. It was hovering, and then it would change direction and altitude abruptly. So it was kind of like bouncing around in kind of like a circle almost, just like going up and down and moving super erratically. Andrews Air Force Base called to Newcastle Air Force Base in Delaware and requested some jets to come check out the area. Two F-95 fighter jets approached DC at about 3 a.m. As soon as they got close, all the blips on the radar mysteriously disappeared.
Oh.
The jets patrolled, they just vanished as soon as they saw this guy coming.
That's icky. I don't like that.
Yeah. The jets patrolled around the area but didn't see anything. When their fuel got low, they decided to head back. And as soon as the jets were out of the area, every single UFO reappeared back on the radar.
What?
Yeah. What? Yeah, as soon as the jets left, they just came back.
Oh.
About a week later, on July 26th, a pilot flying into DC spotted several bright lights following their plane. They called the air traffic control, who confirmed that they were indeed being followed by unidentified aircrafts. That would be a scary thing.
It would.
Normal day flying, and then all of a sudden, a bunch of UFOs just start following you, and the air traffic controller's like, yep, those are UFOs.
Oh. That's yucky.
At around 9:30 p.m., the Andrews Air Force Base was tracking multiple UFOs in every sector on the radar. So they're just all over town, just flying around, causing problems.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Some were sitting still, some were traveling around, and some even clocked speeds over 7,000 miles per hour.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fucking fast.
In the 50s, I don't think they... had any idea of speeds like that.
Mm-mm. At 9:30, two F-95 jets were dispatched from the Newcastle Air Force Base, but when they arrived at the coordinates given by air traffic control, one jet saw nothing, while the other pilot saw four lights flying away from him. He tried to chase them, but they were just too fast.
I wonder why only one of the pilots saw the lights.
That's a good question. Maybe I'm assuming he was just they were
together.
They're probably flying in formation, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's weird.
The other guy was looking out the left, one guy was looking to the right. Like, hey buddy, look over here.
When air traffic control asked if he saw anything, he responded with, "I see them now and they're all around me. What should I do?" That's
shit your pants. That's scary, what you do. Yeah.
No one responded because they didn't know what to do either.
So, they're like,
figure it out, buddy. Yeah.
I don't know. Good luck to you.
When he tried to approach, they would just vanish into midair, both in his eyes and on the radar. So
he was
talking back to air traffic control and be like,
yeah,
hey, I see one. I'm going to go check it out. And then it would disappear for him. And the air traffic control would be like, yeah, we don't see it anymore either.
Yeah, I'm going to
so these things
back.
Are just kind of like, I wonder if they're just taking off super fast or if they're just like actually vanishing and coming back.
Some kind of cloaking thing.
Yeah, super weird.
I don't know. At that point, I'm retiring. I'm flying back to base and I'm like, peace out, guys. It's mm-hmm. been a nice run. I'm going to go like bake cookies or something for the rest of my life now. Thanks.
When asked what they believed caused the blips, almost every air traffic controller said that they thought it was caused by solid metallic objects.
Oh.
From 1948 to 1952, there were about 615 UFO reports registered by the U.S. Air Force. But from mid to late July of 1952, just in July of 1952, the U.S. Air Force registered 717 sightings, wow. with the majority of them being near the D.C. area. So there was more sightings than there had been in the previous 4 years, just in that 1 month.
Wow.
Yeah. Super scary.
That's sketchy.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool, though, if you're the air traffic controller and you can see all these things like traveling super fast and they just disappear. Like,
it'd be disturbing. That'd be pretty cool. It'd be disturbing, though, trying to figure out like what it is and where it's going and why it's there and the purpose and all of that.
And yeah, I would definitely go crazy thinking about that all the time. If I saw a UFO like that, or like a pyramid where he saw it was seven of them that he saw fly over.
Yeah.
That's super scary.
I'm not.
You've never seen a UFO, have you?
No. No, I haven't seen anything.
I think I've seen a UFO.
Have you? Where do you think you saw one?
At football practice.
Oh, that's right. We talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're all sitting in the huddle and I looked up and saw this. It looked like a blimp, but we don't have blimps in Klamath Falls.
No.
And I was just kind of like looking at it and then I got yelled at for not paying attention to the coach. And I looked back up like 30 seconds later and it was gone, like completely out of the area, and it was clear sky. It was super weird.
That is weird. You don't think it was a drone or anything?
It was so high, I don't think it could have been a drone. It was like at airplane altitude, but it was like, it looked like a blimp.
Weird.
Yeah. Huh. Super weird.
That's sketchy.
Yeah.
I'm not down. No, thank you. All right. Are you ready to hear about my love triangle?
Yes.
Okay. And I mean, love triangles crack me up. You know, they're so common when you watch movies and TVs and things. And there's always, typically it's two guys fighting over one girl. And she's like, I like you, but I like him, but I like him, but I like you. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that really happens as much in true life as it does in TV and the movies. And it always, you know,
yeah,
usually in the TV and the movies, it turns out you know, kind of good, but this one doesn't. So this story is about a love triangle that turns into a roller coaster ride of confusion and lies and unfortunately death. So definitely not one of those love triangles from TV that everything turns out peachy keen and everyone's friends afterwards. In 2012, Dave Krupa had just become a single man. He was 35 years old. For the last decade plus, he had been in a long-term relationship with Amy Flora. So I'm going to start this off by saying there's a lot of names. And I'm going to try and make this less confusing because there are a lot of names. I don't remember. I've heard this story on another podcast one time years ago, and I was so confused because of all of the names. So I get very confused when there's a lot of names. So I'm going to hopefully make this less confusing for everyone.
I don't register names in my brain. I just use faces. So when there's a ton of names, it's
right
confusing. Yeah. I'll try and keep along.
So if you get confused, just tell me to shut up and explain it, and I will. But I think I tried to write this script based on the level of confusion that happens for people, including me. So
Okay. We've
got Dave. He's the dude. He was in a long-term relationship with Amy. They met at work, soon fell in love. They had two children together, but unfortunately the romance didn't last. One second. Amy wanted to move to Nebraska, so when she moved, so did Dave. Even though the couple weren't together anymore, Dave wanted to be close to his children. So good dad award for him, because I know people who don't do that, and it always puzzles my brain when people don't do that. But setting up for a new life in Omaha, Dave got a job working as a mechanic. Feeling a little lonely in a new town where he didn't know anyone, Dave started looking around on dating websites. Normal, everyday behavior. He met Liz Gallier on one of those websites. The two had a lot of things in common, both having similar interests and each having two children. Liz owned her own business, a cleaning company. They went on several dates and seemed to be getting along really well. However, Dave wasn't interested in having a serious, exclusive relationship. And he let Liz know that right from the beginning. He wanted to keep things, you know, casual and not be boyfriend, girlfriend, if you want to call it that. He was just like, hey, we're friends. Let's friends with benefits kind of situation, I guess, if you will. Okay. She said she understood that and she agreed with it. No problems. All seemed to be going well until October of 2012, when Dave saw a woman that he was very attracted to. Dave met Carrie Farber through work. She was a customer at his work. A couple of weeks later, he saw Carrie's profile on a dating website, so he asked her out. Carrie was a 37-year-old single mother with a teenage son, and she worked in computers. Their first date had some awkward moments because Liz was continually texting and calling Dave during the night. So Dave's on a date with Carrie, and Liz, the we're just going to be friends with benefits friend, is constantly texting and calling him and interrupting the date.
Okay.
Yeah. Then when Dave and Carrie went to his apartment, Liz showed up. She just knocked on the door and is like, hey, I'm here. Yeah. She claimed that she needed to grab some things that she had left at his apartment. Being in an awkward situation, Carrie said, I'm just going to go home. So she left. She went home. After Liz left Dave's house, he called Carrie and she invited him over to her house. So he went. From the beginning, she told Dave she wasn't interested in a serious monogamous relationship, and she also wanted to keep things casual between the two of them, which is what he wanted anyway. So he was like, cool, let's do that. We're going to get along great because I don't want you to be my girlfriend, and I want to just be friends with benefits because that's fun. Mm-hmm. So with both of them being on the same page about the status of their relationship, all seemed to be going well. They spent a couple of weeks enjoying each other's company and occasionally staying the night at each other's house. In mid-November, just a couple weeks after they started, they went on their first date. So they haven't been, you know, hanging out together that much long, you know, very long. Mid-November 2012, Dave left Carrie at his apartment to go to work. A few hours later, he got a text from Carrie saying that they should move in together, which shocked him a lot because they had had the conversation that we're just going to be friends with benefits. Essentially, this is nothing exclusive. We're not dating. We're not in a relationship. They had both come to that agreement. So when she texts him and is like, hey, I want to move in with you, he's like, that's not what we had discussed. So thinking things were moving too fast and getting more serious than he wanted, he told her he wasn't interested in living together. Her responses immediately were angry and volatile, surprising Dave again. When he went home for lunch that day, Carrie and her things from the previous night were gone. He figured their relationship was over, but Carrie kept sending messages. So he goes home at lunch. She's gone. Her stuff is gone, but she's sending him nasty messages. Her messages were mean, rude, and threatening. A few days later, Carrie's mom reported her missing. Initially, Carrie's mom thought nothing of the lack of contact from Carrie. She knew that Carrie had a new guy in her life, that they'd been spending time together. So it's not like she was expecting to hear from her every day, but she was also like, why haven't I heard from her? This is weird. When she continued to hit a wall when trying to reach Carrie, she got worried and reported her missing. Sheriff's officers contacted Dave asking where Carrie was, because he's the guy in her life. He explained the situation and even showed them the threatening messages that he had been receiving from Carrie since he told her he didn't want to live with her. The officers figured this was just a bad breakup. Everything would calm down after a while. She was just upset about everything and just, you know, needed some time alone. Carrie also texted her boss and quit her job. She was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be here. She eventually contacted her mother through Facebook, told her that she didn't want to come home. Carrie told her mom that she found a new job in a different state and she would return later to pick up her 14-year-old son. Remember, she's a single mom. Mm-hmm. She insisted she wasn't missing, but just needed time to herself. Carrie had a history of mental health illness, so officers considered that maybe she had gone off her medication and was struggling with mental health issues again. Since people were still receiving texts and emails from Carrie, law enforcement didn't really pursue the missing persons report any further. Dave continued receiving texts and emails from Carrie. She was threatening people that he knew and people that he worked with. So she's sending him like a bunch of messages a day, not just like once or twice. We're talking like over the course of this whole story, like thousands of messages that Carrie is sending him. Yeah. She also commented on his location. So saying, hey, I see you at this restaurant, or I see you're talking to this person at your work. So it appeared that she was stalking him.
Oh, yeah. Shit. That's scary.
Right. He reported it to the police and they started an investigation. The investigation, the investigator did surveillance on Dave, thinking, you know, well, she's watching him, so I'm going to watch him. So he was trying to find Carrie watching him, and he even showed Carrie's picture to people in the area, but no one had seen Carrie. So he's watching Dave. He sees other people around, neighbors, stuff like that. And he shows Carrie's picture and nobody is like, oh yeah, I saw her or anything. So she's doing a really good job of stalking him that no one is seeing her. One day, Liz shows up at Dave's apartment. Liz was the girl, the first dating website girl. Mm-hmm. She shows him that her car has been keyed and there's severe damage to the paint and body of the vehicle. She then shows him threatening messages that she'd been receiving from Carrie as well. One day, Dave receives texts from Carrie showing pictures that she is inside Liz's house.
Fuck. That's not good.
Not only was Carrie inside the house, but she had spray painted the wall. Dave felt Liz was in danger and that it was all because of his short relationship with Carrie.
Did she spray paint on the walls? Fuck you, bitch.
I watched the documentary. I think, if I remember right, she spray painted the word whore or something like that on the wall. Okay. And just like nasty shit. So Dave and Liz start to rekindle their relationship. They're bonding over the mutual harassment, the stalking that Carrie is doing on both of them. They end up getting back together. It was common for them to be together when they would each receive numerous threatening messages from Carrie. So they'd be sitting at dinner or watching a movie or just together, and they'd pop off getting all these messages from Carrie, threatening stuff and harassing things. One occasion, Liz discovered that Dave's house had been broken into. A message to go away was written on the ceiling of the bedroom, and many of Liz's clothes had been slashed and cut by something. Even though there was a looming threat over them, Dave and Liz carried on their relationship off and on for about 3 years. It wasn't consistent. They would break up and get back together and stuff. Whenever the relationship would start to die down, the harassment from Carrie would ramp back up again. One particular tragic event occurred in August 2013, right after Dave and Liz broke up. Liz called Dave extremely upset because her house had burned down, killing her four pets in the process.
Oh.
Which is like, it's so tragic. Yeah. Dave soon got a text from Carrie admitting that she was responsible for the fire at Liz's house, remarking that she hoped Liz and her kids would have died. Which, again,
that's just fucked up.
It's so messed up. These new threats and escalation of violence rekindled the romance between Liz and Dave again for a short time, but the relationship kept starting and stopping. The threats and harassment from Carrie continued over the duration of the relationship, with Dave receiving thousands of messages. Out of nowhere, Amy started receiving messages from Carrie as well. Amy is his baby mama. So his two kids are with Amy. They all live in the same town because he wanted to be close to his kids. Amy starts receiving these messages from Carrie. So his longtime girlfriend, baby mama, she starts getting harassed as well. Not only threatening her, but also threatening the children. Which, come on. Knock that shit off. Yeah. People are... Yeah. Leave kids out of it. Kids had nothing to do with it. Don't be an asshole.
No.
Some of the messages even detailed where Amy was and what she was doing at the moment, clearly showing that she was being watched and stalked as well. 2 years after Carrie was reported missing, a new set of investigators started looking into her case again. They noticed that Carrie's home had been photographed in the original investigation and all of her belongings were still in the home, which was odd since she told her family that she had a new job in Kansas. So she had moved out of state but left all her shit there. They also noticed that there was no activity on her bank or credit cards in the past 2 years. Based on this information, investigators now believe that Carrie had not left on her own and that she was likely dead.
It's no good.
Not good. So now they need to figure out who was impersonating Carrie for years, threatening people through texts and emails. Investigators looked at the IP addresses of the harassing emails and discovered that many had been sent using a VPN, or making it essentially impossible to trace. VPN bouncing around.
Changes your location of your IP, right, pretty much.
Yeah. Right. However, not all of them were sent using that method, and many of them had been sent from one specific IP address, which they were able to link back to Liz Gallier.
Who would have thought?
There was not enough evidence to arrest Liz at this point regarding Carrie's disappearance and assumed murder, because they're like, she's gone and she's been gone for years and no one's heard from her legitimately, and her banks have never been touched. So yeah, she's dead and somebody killed her. Investigators decided to track Liz's vehicle. They found that Liz was now stalking Dave's ex, Amy, the baby mama. She was driving past Amy's house multiple times a day, making them concerned for Amy's safety. Rightly so. Yeah. They're figuring she killed Carrie. She's been stalking and harassing everybody, and now they had proof that she was driving around Amy's house all the day. Dave had bought a gun at one point, and then he discovered that his gun had been stolen. So in December 2015, 3 years after Carrie was last seen, the situation took another turn. Liz called 911 to report that she had been shot in the leg, claiming that Amy had shot her. So she's stalking Amy, but then she ends up with a bullet wound to the leg and said Amy did it to her. Liz also said that Amy had confessed that she had killed Carrie. So Liz, whose house burned down and pets died and all these bad things that happened to her, now had been shot, and it was reportedly done by Dave's baby mama. Based on the knowledge that Liz had been impersonating Carrie for years and was actively stalking Amy, officers didn't believe Liz's account of the shooting or her supposed, you know, reported confession that Amy gave her. So they're just letting her tell these stories,
tell this story,
even though they know it's
she's
shit.
Fucking lying.
Yes. So law enforcement suggests that Dave move in with Amy because she's clearly being stalked by Liz, and they want him to be there to protect his children. This was their suggestion. You should be there to protect your children. So he's like, that sounds like a good idea. Which Liz found out about and pissed her right off. She was not happy at that. And she's pissed because she's like, Amy confessed to me and she shot me, and you guys are just letting her live with her ex and you're not even arresting her. And they're like, whatever, you big fat liar. What Liz didn't know was that during the original stages of Carrie's missing person investigation and the harassment case, law enforcement had acquired some interesting evidence. Carrie's car was found months after she had been reported missing. Liz, who was involved in saying that Carrie had been harassing her, had given law enforcement her phone to prove the harassment allegations. And so they had downloaded everything, and what they found on there was that Liz had a picture of Carrie's car on her phone. This was found in the harassment investigation, and they initially just thought, whatever, not a big deal. But the picture was taken after Carrie disappeared, but before her car was found. So in the weeks leading between the two incidences, Liz had gotten a picture of Carrie's car. And they were like, well, the only way that she would have gotten this is if she knew where the car was located, because she put it there. Because no one else knew where the car was. They when once they found the vehicle, they fingerprinted and they found a fingerprint that matched Liz inside the vehicle. Liz's story about Amy killing Carrie was not adding up, obviously. Officers didn't want to tip off Liz until they had more evidence, though. But it didn't take long to get the evidence because Liz was so upset about Dave and Amy living together that she started her harassment up. She started sending officers emails claiming that Amy had sent them to her with detailed accounts of Carrie's murder and disposal of the body. Hmm. Officers knew that Liz was sending them herself, posing as Amy. So, again, a circle of confusion in a different form of the love triangle. Liz, being pissed about Dave and Amy living together, sends herself emails with details about Carrie's murder and disposal of the body. And then she sends those emails to the cops saying, Amy sent me this stuff and her confession of murdering Carrie. And of course, investigators are like, whatever, you're a big fat liar. And we know you're sending them to yourself. But the emails detailed that Carrie had been stabbed in her own vehicle, and investigators were able to find blood in the vehicle that corroborated that account. Liz was arrested, but when confronted with the evidence, she denied everything and maintained her innocence. Not only did the prosecutors have the evidence of the emails, Liz's fingerprint in Carrie's car, her history of stalking Amy, but they also found a picture on Liz's phone of Carrie's foot that appeared that she had been deceased at the time that the picture was taken.
She's fucking gray and blue.
Well, so in the documentary, they talked about that there were veins visible in the foot that would only have appeared after death.
Okay.
So, like, yeah.
That's weird.
It is weird. Unfortunately, though, they didn't have Carrie's body, but that didn't matter because Liz was convicted of Carrie's murder. Liz was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And
good.
Remember how I said that when her and Dave were often together, they would receive texts from Carrie, the threatening, harassing messages.
Mm-hmm.
It was Liz had downloaded an app that she could schedule messages from. So she would schedule them at a time when she knew that she and Dave would be together. So it looked like she wasn't sending them to herself.
That's kind of smart, actually.
Yeah. I wonder if that is why most, well, like I can't figure out. I know with iPhone, with iMessages, there's no way to schedule it. You can't do that. But my old phone, you could schedule messages. Mm. And that was really convenient for me because I would always forget to send somebody a message until it was too late. And then I'm like, shit. But you can't do that. And I don't think Dad's new phone, you can't do that on either. So I should say his new phone, his old phone. We had the same phone and I could do it from my old phone, but they changed that app and you can't do it anymore.
Oh, that's weird.
I wonder if that's why. Because they were like, people are sending harassing. I'm sure it's not why, but you know. Sounds like a good story.
Yeah.
So, love triangles are bad. Moral of the yes. story. Do you have a chaser for us? Oh, I asked you first. You're up.
My chaser is a watch recommendation on Netflix. It's the new Jerry Seinfeld movie, Unfrosted. It's
okay.
It's about the invention of the Pop-Tart, and it's pretty funny. It's kind of like a cutesy kid-style movie, but it's pretty funny.
Okay.
Some good jokes in there.
Nice. It was like a good comedy.
Yeah. What's your chaser?
My chaser is something that I saw on Instagram recently. And, you know, you get all these ads on Instagram and half of that, if not more of that shit is fake. And I saw this and it wasn't actually an ad. It was a legitimate looking post that somebody, like a tech person, had posted. Anyway, it's called Paint Cam Eve. It's a security camera that you can put on your front porch and it shoots paintballs at intruders.
That's funny. Unless
you can also put tear gas balls in it and it will shoot tear gas balls. Now, I think that depends, your ability to use that depends on what state and local laws and everything. Yeah. But I still think it would be badass to have that and it would be funny as hell.
Well, they make this, like, I think it's called the Burna. It's like a, it's a gun that's not a real gun. And it shoots pepper balls. So it's got like, it's got like super high pressure CO2 and it like, it leaves like cuts on you and then it bursts open like with pepper spray. So you could probably put that in there.
Probably. I think the company actually might sell the tear gas balls, but they might only sell it if you live in an area where you can shoot someone. I don't even know like where you would find that in your restrictions. Local laws.
Yeah.
Oh, I would assume so. But yeah. I thought it was hilarious that
that's super smart.
There was something like that out there. So
alrighty. Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode.
It does. Thank you everyone for hanging out with us and listening to our stories and supporting us, and we appreciate it.
Yeah, go check us out on all your favorite streaming platforms.
Absolutely, and tell all your friends.
All right, love you, Mom.
Sharing is caring. I love you, bud.
Bye.
Bye. Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.